I respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded, and pay my respects to their elders past and present, and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today. And welcome back to Miss Inclusivity, the podcast. My name is Bridget, your host, as always. And I am finally recording the anonymous questions box that everybody had sent through a couple of weeks ago. There were quite a few that came through. So what year level do you hope to teach? Well, this has really changed throughout my degree. I would definitely say that now I really want to do the upper years. The main reason is because I just love the content. It's not for everyone, you know. I mean, some of my close friends love the younger years, but I definitely love the upper years. It's just because I just think of myself as a teacher and I love hanging out with the younger years. Don't get me wrong. I love them so much. Especially at OSH, you know, like I engage with all kids of all year levels and I love them all so much, but the upper years is definitely more for me after doing all of my placements. I mean, when I first went into my grade five classroom, I was so scared. And I was so worried. I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are going to be so much bigger than me. But I really enjoy the upper years just because of the content and the independence as well and the banter. I like joking around with the kids a lot. And I feel like you can joke around with the older kids a lot more. I feel like when I do, you know, some sarcastic drops for the younger kids, they don't really get it. And I tend to do it a lot. So that's another reason, but yeah. My go-to everyday perfume is definitely Cloud by Ariana Grande. I always get compliments when I wear that. But another one is, I think it's called Winter Bloom by Zara. Super random, but oh my gosh, one of my friends wore it and she wears it a lot. And every single time I see her, I'm like, is that perfume again? Because she just smells incredible. So I did get it and yeah, I love it. It's actually amazing. I love it. Next question. What is your best behavior management system that you think works well in the younger years? Oh, very good. So behavior management system in regards to, you know, keeping everyone engaged and not disengaged is, you know, like Simon says, sort of situation. So, you know, hands on heads, hands on shoulders, hands on knees, those sorts of things. And then tricking them by putting your hands on your nose when you say put your hands on your shoulders. That one works a treat. The call outs work amazing as well. But a behavior management system in regards to like rewards, definitely like stamp charts or sticker charts are amazing for the younger years. They absolutely love those. And make sure that they're working towards a goal. Because, you know, they don't want to just, some kids do love stickers just for the sake of it. But, you know, if you're implementing a behavior management system, especially at an individual level, I would definitely say that you would definitely need to both agree on. So both teacher and student agree on an end goal for that as well. Ways or approaches you get your class's attention. Goodness, this really changed a lot depending on where I am. At OSH, it tends to always be hands on top. That means stop, just because of how much of an area we have. I just want to make sure that everybody is listening. I tend to do that a lot. I've got a very loud voice as well, if anybody hasn't put that together. I tend to do that a lot at OSH. My second last placement, that was in grade fives. That's when that TikTok trend was going around. Berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a little lad who loves berries and cream. So I would get my kid, I would say berries and cream. And then the kids would repeat the second half of that. Just because they were grade five and, you know, although they're not meant to have TikTok, you'd be surprised of how many kids have TikTok these days. And 1, 2, 3 hours on me is always a good one. But yeah, that's what I basically do. If anybody has any others, please let me know. How do you get into teacher aid work? I feel like there are never any advertisements. I honestly just contacted the schools directly and I just said, hey, this is me. I am currently this far into my teaching degree, which means that I am qualified. And yeah, I just said, I'm more than happy to do relief. Reliefing obviously gets your foot in the door and then they see you, you know, doing the job and the teachers at the school see you doing it. And they obviously, you know, teachers talk. So yeah, I pretty much did that. and got my foot. I've worked at like 6 or 7 different schools over the past year, which is great. But I've mainly been going back to 2 different schools, which is awesome as well, because I've really built up a relationship with both of those schools and I love them both in equal ways, in different ways as well. But yeah, it's, I would definitely recommend it, especially if you are doing your degree. Oh, a bit savage. Why is it taking you so long to finish your uni? Aren't you 26? Gosh, man. yes, I'm 26. If you follow me on Instagram, you would know that I have spoken about it a bit. So I started my degree straight out of when I came out of high school. So I was 18 when I graduated in Queensland. I did 2 years of my degree full time. And then I went back into 2017 and I did the first half of the year. And then I was deciding that I did the first semester and then the second semester came along and it worked out that when all of the assessments were going to be due is when I was like moving house and all these sorts of things. And there was a lot happening at that time and I knew I wouldn't be able to do it. So originally I was just going to defer for the semester. And then a lot of, things in my personal life happened. So I, you know, needed a break from it, which was great. My mental health at that time was not the best. And then it rolled over to 2018 and I had finally decided that I was going to Europe. I was sick and tired of seeing everybody going over to Europe for the European summer when I've been wanting to do it for so long. So like by this point, it was like 4 years. So I finally decided that, you know, I'm not going to go back to uni until I've done that. So I pretty much decided that right before everybody was going to the European summer. So in like May of 2018. And then I just went and booked a Kentucky in the July for the following year. So for 2019, I didn't know who I was going with. And to be honest, at that time, I did not care. I was just like talking to some of my mates and I was like, I'm going to Europe. If you want to come, come. If not, that's fine. And then I ended up having a few friends come, but because I'm such an organized and control freak, I just needed somebody to like lock it in and be certain that they were going to go. Enter my boyfriend now. basically, he came into my life in the September of that year. And actually, even before we started dating, he literally went and booked the trip and was like, I'm coming with you, which is crazy to think of now. But at the time I was like, oh gosh, I did pre-warn him. I was like, I'm a bit crazy. I'm a bit full on. And who's to say we're going to be together, like, or even friends in 10 months time. And he's like, don't worry about it, honestly. And I'm so glad that he did. And I'm so glad that he came because he's originally from Europe. So we ended up spending that whole European summer in 2019 together. And then I came back in 2020 to finish off my degree part-time at the time. So pretty much 2020 and the first half of 2021, I just did it part-time because I was still working so much. I was working myself to the bone. And then now I'm finished finally, but also I've had a lot of setbacks. Like obviously like COVID's been a big thing. My university completely changed how they structured the degree. So I think I was actually technically meant to finish in like July. But they've completely changed how they structure the degree. So now I'm not finishing until now, which is super annoying. Like I would have had another 6 months in the profession and yeah, but you know, it is what it is. And I wouldn't change it for the world because basically now me and my partner are finishing our degrees at the same time. So, I mean, 26, I'm still young. And also I've said it once and I'll say it again. Actually, I've probably said it multiple times. I feel like I have so much more of an advantage now, like reflecting upon myself, becoming a teacher at 26 versus what I would have done at 22. Like just what I knew about the world and how I interacted with, you know, even parents and stuff like that and children. I just didn't have the experience and I'm so happy now that I'm going into the profession now. What's the most embarrassing thing that's happened on prac or whilst teacher aiding? I don't know if any, I don't really get embarrassed that easy just because I'm just crazy all the time. I don't really know. The only embarrassing thing, but it's not even embarrassing to me, is just like I have completely different handwriting and I'm understanding that when I need to write on the board, I need to be writing, you know, in the font that we teach the kids. And on my last placement, the second last placement, sorry, so the one I did this time last year was in a grade five class, and the kids were able to pick up on and be like, oi, you're doing that letter wrong, or oi, you're doing that number wrong. And but, you know, that's what kids are for, you know. I don't really have anything embarrassing happen. Teacher rating, nope. I can't even think of anything. Nothing. I just don't find anything embarrassing. There might be some things that others find embarrassing, but yeah, not me. What are some tips on building relationships with family on prac? Easiest thing is meet the teacher sheet and get them to get your, like, I know a lot of people print it out and stick it on the front of the classroom, but you'd be surprised of how many, like, parents don't even come to the classroom anymore. Like, think about how many kids are in your class that go to before school care or get the bus to school. So I get my mentor teacher to send it out to the parents. If they do a weekly newsletter sort of situation, get them to send it with that, or just send an email with it. And that really builds the relationship. I did have some parents reply and be like, oh, you know, congratulations. Like, this is amazing. And some of them even gave me some information and insight into their child as well, which is great. Cause again, that started to collect, and can inform your decisions furthermore for the, lessons that you teach. If you were to send out a survey to parents at the beginning of prac, what are some questions you would like to ask? I like that. That's pretty cool. I'm assuming you're meaning like a Survey Monkey, so you could send them like a link. You could even do things that you wish, like you could even just do like a, you could do a multiple choice to make it easy, for the parents. Cause obviously parents just, obviously, you know, they have kids, so they've got a lot on their plate already. So just make it like a multiple choice. Ask questions in regards to what they expect and their expectations from you. If they know about a student teacher, like some kids just never have had a mentor student teacher. I would even ask questions like any data that you want to collect. So maybe some questions like, if your child has additional needs, or a diagnosis, do you feel as if, you know, XYZ is fulfilling your requirements or what you expect sort of situation? But it depends on what you're collecting, really. Depends what you're after. Ways you engage your class. I will always try and make sure that you cater for their interests. Cater for their interests is the biggest thing. So like I said, when I was on my placement last year in grade five, at that time, like the trending sound on TikTok was the berries and cream. So, you know, they all thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Then also, last year I had a stamp collection and the kids just, they loved that. They loved the stamps. So it really motivated them and really engaged them in the task, because I was like, look, this is the stamp I'm going to use today. It's got a taco on it. They're like, yeah, let's do it. Any way that you can include their interest, whether it's Minecraft, whether it's Fortnite, whether it's, I don't know, whatever the trending thing is at the time for kids, try and input that. Are you going to be adding more inclusivity resources to your TPT account? Yeah, I'm trying my best, but at the moment I've got to focus on another massive project that I've been working on for like 4 months now, with Kindy with Keats. It should be announced like this week or next week after this podcast come out. So you guys will find out soon. Very exciting. But if there's anything that you want, definitely message me. I can whip it up. Favorite subject to teach and why? I love science and I love HASS. They're fun. Just because of the content. Like there's so many different things. It's so fun. I love it so much. Like I did a democracy unit last year in year five and I ended up throwing like a class election. It really engaged them, and I even got them to do like a campaign. They had to choose a party leader. They created their own parties. It was honestly, it was great. It was the best. So I love teaching those. Like in science, I taught space last year. This year we did colonization in grade four. What did I do in science? Oh, that's right. How do I forget? In science, they were learning about, in grade four, they were learning about the Earth's surface and, you know, like erosion and all that. And then I finished off the unit with like a lesson on fossils, because they obviously learn about, you know, how fossils disintegrate or, you know, change over time. And yeah, so I brought in my boyfriend's collection, absolute massive collection of fossils. loves dinosaurs. His dad is a geologist, so that's why. I brought them all in and the kids absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. Next question. I will be going on a placement for term 4 as a teacher aide. What do you think I should take with me? Also, since the curriculum is harder now than it used to be, how can I get up to speed? Should I buy these Excel books and go through them? Placement as a teacher aide. That's interesting. I wouldn't even know what's involved in that. I think it's more observations and maybe planning like small group activities because you wouldn't be planning for a whole class. Yes, the curriculum is very hard to keep up with. I wouldn't download the Excel books. I would simply just go onto the curriculum website. Like, this depends on what state you're in as well. But ever since doing my assignments, since the curriculum's changed, is when I've really been able to like delve through and see the difference. Like, for example, on my last placement, I was teaching grade 4 students how to change in metric units. So like go from centimeters to meters, you know, you multiply by 100, like divide by 100, whatever, et cetera. That's now moved to grade 6, which I was shocked about. I saw it as a curriculum link in grade 6 as I've been doing like my last assignment for uni. Same as area. Area has now moved to grade 5. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, everything is just pushed back, which is crazy to me. I don't think it's harder, to be honest. I think it's become easier because everything that they've learned now is pushed back by a year, which I get it. It's matching with the times because now basically there's like 2 years of students learning, doing online learning and disruptions. There's been nothing consistent. So I get that. But now those kids that I had in grade 4, in 2 years' time, they're going to relearn exactly what they learned in grade 4. Great because of the reinforcement, but I mean, if they've already learned and they already know, that's just going to be a whole unit that's just going to be brushed to the side, basically. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it gets rolled out. I'm very intrigued. But what you should take with you, I would definitely say take stickers, take a planner to take observational notes in, 100%, because you need to be noting down everything in the classroom. Stickers, what else to say? Judy stuff, so like a sunsafe hat, a whistle, a lanyard to keep your whistle on, and a USB. Take a USB on your lanyard as well. Because for instance, yes, you can email back and forth and you can drop things onto a drive, but I remember I needed it for my mentor teacher when we were literally sending whole unit things. So it would just take too long to upload onto a drive and take too long to email. So chuck it on a USB. That's pretty much what I can recommend off the top of my head. Why do you only want to work in the private system? Curious. I don't know where you got that from. Interesting. I will take anything at this point. I will take any school, but I don't really have I just have a preference in regards to what schools stand for. One of the schools that I applied for that I feel like I want to get one of them. They had a project-based learning system in grade 5 and 6. So, I mean, that's obviously a notion that I was leaning towards. But I wouldn't say there's nothing bad about state schools. Like this is in Queensland as well. So it's very different to any other state. In Queensland, if you're in a state school, like you can get transferred at any time. Like permanency does not mean that you stay at the same school. Whereas in New South Wales, from my understanding and what people have told me is that if you get permanency, like you stay at that school, like they won't move you around. And going rural is encouraged. Whereas in Queensland, it's pretty much mandated. It's a big difference in every state that you go to. And obviously the curriculums are different too. The difference between private and states, like obviously at private schools, you know, there's more, I found that there's a lot more teacher aides at state schools, which is great. Like I see that as the biggest plus ever because we all know how big the teaching load is. So I feel like having lots of teacher aides at a school is a great sign. So take of that what you will. Next question. Any tips for working in a low socioeconomic public school? This is a really tough question. I've only had a little bit of experience. I wouldn't say it's low, very low socioeconomic, but it's quite low. And there's just a lot a lot of behavioral needs. So I would definitely say you need to be wary of your students. I would say you need to understand what's happening in their homes. And obviously you can do that in the first couple of weeks at school, just to get an understanding and to know, you know, triggers, or for anybody, you know, if it's, especially if it's low socioeconomic, you need to be cautious as a teacher. And yeah, really get to know your students on a very deeper level and a personal level, so that it can drive any, you know, differentiation that you need to do in the classroom. Understand, you know, what needs to happen on the playground, because that can also be a very overwhelming time for some students as well. And also it can be an overwhelming time for teachers on duty in a low socioeconomic school. So yeah, that's just my only advice, is just to get really know your students and their triggers as well. Do you think you'll stay a teacher for over the years to come, or will you leave and expand your business to a full-time income? I don't think I will ever make my business like a full-time income. Like if it gets to a point where it's pretty big, I may not take a classroom job and just be a relief teacher. But obviously the only thing that makes me and ah about that is like the Christmas holidays, because that's a long period of not teaching. So basically like all year, you're just saving up enough money to put aside for Christmas holidays. So, and that's just like an extra thing that you got to do. I wouldn't say I'd do it full time. No, I definitely want to be more on the teacher side of things for sure. Let's see if we've got any others that I haven't answered. Do you think you'll last long in the teaching profession? I already feel so burnt out as a pre-service teacher. I get that, and I feel like it's very different, the load that you feel as a pre-service teacher versus as a teacher. I can't speak from experience, but I think I will last long. If I feel burnt out, I'll just step back to relief teaching. Like I've seen so many, and I'm sure you all have seen a lot of teachers taking a step back this year, just because of how crazy the profession is getting. So there is that option, but I don't feel like I'm going to leave teaching if I feel burnt out. All right, well, I think that's going to be all the questions that I'll answer on this episode, guys. Thank you so much for sending them through. I love getting these questions. There obviously will be, you know, the odd few that are just a bit how you going. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. I think there won't be many episodes left of season 2. We're up to, what's this, like episode 12 or something, which is crazy. So I'm almost hitting 30 episodes for this year. Crazy. Thank you so much, guys. And I will speak to you soon.